You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. As we chat early on this Monday morning, what a glorious morning it is across the greater Houston area. In large part, that's because the Rockets just wrapped up a 118-95 win in Los Angeles. Rockets now 18-4 on the year. It's their 13th win in their past 14 games. Their 7th in a row, now 7-0 since the return of Chris Paul. 8-0 in games that Chris Paul has played on the season. Just a phenomenal basketball team to this point in the year. Obviously number one in the Western Conference with that 18-4 record, even ahead of the Warriors. I won't say the competition was great on Sunday night in Los Angeles against the Lakers, but it's certainly a Lakers team with a lot of athletes. They play hard. They gave the Warriors quite a run for their money just a few nights ago, so I'm not going to sit here and say that it was an easy game. We all know Matt Moore of CBS Sports always likes to throw out the LA nightlife is undefeated. Well, the Rockets got there on Friday. They had a couple of nights of LA nightlife, and no matter what they may have done off the floor, it did not affect them on it, because not only did they win, they won going away. And that margin, you know, the theme for the Rockets, we know that the schedule has not been at its toughest these past couple of weeks, but you have to hope that whatever you lose in the weeks ahead from the standpoint of the schedule getting more difficult, you gain from increasing margins, most notably the continued integration of Chris Paul back into the lineup, and boy, that's exactly what's happening. So to break down how this game went, what it means, I'm going to break it down in our usual 3 points recap style, in which we just look at the three main storylines, both short-term and long-term, what we take out of this game, what it means in the bigger picture for your Rockets. And again, it's kind of a weird time in the schedule because the Rockets had not played again. They had not played since this past Wednesday, and they're not going to play again until Thursday. So basically, it's their only game in 8 days. A lot of off days, just a quirk in the schedule. But because of that, you were able to have, even with the LA nightlife, if you want to acknowledge that as a factor, you had a lot of fresh legs. And because of that, it was a game in which the Rockets actually made their hay, not with their starters, but with their bench. And so when you look at this game, the first and third quarter, when predominantly starters played, now Ryan only played 12 minutes. Ryan Anderson left early with back spasms, not really considered serious, but because there's this time off, it kind of makes sense not to push him at this point. Hopefully by Thursday in Utah, he's feeling a lot better. But the first and third quarters with the starters, the Rockets were actually outscored 54-51. The Lakers against the Rockets starters did fine. It was actually the domination of the second unit. The Rockets won the second and fourth quarters 67-41. That is a staggering margin. And in large part, they did it in the early part of those quarters with the second unit, the Rockets' second unit going against the bench of the Lakers. And as we've talked about throughout this year, the theme for the Rockets is they believe with 48 minutes of Hall of Fame level point guard play with either James Harden or Chris Paul, one of them being out there at all times, at some point, and it's often going to happen when you're going against second team players instead of first, the other team is going to go into a lull that you simply do not have. And that's absolutely what played out in this one. I thought big picture, there was a great stat put out there from Tim McMahon of ESPN. He was looking at the net ratings, and he's at ESPN underscore McMahon on Twitter. But he was looking at the net ratings of the Rockets since Chris Paul's return. When both James Harden and Chris Paul are out there, the Rockets have a plus 10.7 net rating. When James Harden is out there alone with no Chris Paul, it's plus 32.7. When it's Chris Paul without James Harden, it's plus 43.9, which is just staggering and off the charts. And no, I don't buy the idea that there's some sort of problem in integrating the two and that they're better off individually. No, what I think that speaks to is the minutes of the game when the Rockets are going up against largely second-teamers from the other team, and it just becomes overwhelming for them to keep up. And I think there's a slight advantage to Chris because Chris tends to play a little bit more in that bench role than James does. James will play a few minutes because they do alternate, they do stagger, but by and large, Chris gets a lot of those minutes early in the second, early in the fourth quarters, and that's where the Rockets made hay in this one, and well, it's where they've made hay in a lot of these matchups of late. As far as individual stat lines, both on Sunday night were really, really good. James Harden, 36 points, 9 assists, 13 of 22 from the field. Chris Paul, 21 points, 6 rebounds, 8 of 17 from the field. Harden played 35 minutes. Paul played 33. So they're both in, I would say, peak form. Paul in particular, there's no minutes limitation anymore. He's comfortably exceeding 30 minutes per game, which is great to see. But as much as it was nice to see them shoot well individually, you combine those, that's 21 of 39 from the field, which is phenomenal from two smaller players, two guards, to shoot over 50% collectively, and they were a combined 8 of 16 from behind the arc. Yes, that's tremendous. We all know James is from Los Angeles. Chris Paul, it was his reunion game at Staples Center after playing the last several seasons with the Clippers. It wasn't against the Clippers, against the Lakers, but same building, same scene. So you know he went out there with a purpose. And so, yes, they both, you know, James and Chris, they love playing in LA. And so, yes, there was a little bit of a statement game component to it. But beyond them shooting well, beyond anything they did individually, it's about the difference it made for the team as a whole. Because, boy, as I said, 67 to 41 in those second and fourth quarters. And then you look, it's not just them. You look at the bench, not just the numbers, but the plus minus. Now, Eric Gordon did have 22 points. I'll touch on him in my second point in just a few moments. But look at the plus minus. Eric was plus 37. Luke Bamute, in his 27 minutes, was plus 28. And he only made one field goal. He was 1 of 4 from the field. Luke Bamute was plus 28. P.J. Tucker was plus 15. Nene was plus 15. All of them played reasonably well. Nene had 9 and 4. P.J. had 8 and 7. There was a lot of energy. You did have a lot of made threes. Rockets as a team on the night were 14 of 37, which is just below 38%. That will definitely play, especially when you factor in the volume that the Rockets typically shoot with. But it's about the collective energy. And, of course, it's not just about offense. It's defense as well. In the 7 games since Chris Paul has returned, the Rockets had the best net rating defensively in the entire NBA. On the season as a whole, they are now 2nd in the NBA in offense, but 5th in defense. That's a phenomenal total for a group that was largely mediocre on that side a year ago. And a big part of that, it's early in the second and fourth quarters when you have those lineups with Chris Paul, Luke Bamute, and P.J. Tucker. It's not just the ranginess. It's not just the athleticism. It's the IQ. When you have 3 of 5 players that are that versatile and that smart, their hands are everywhere. They anticipate so well. So yes, we make a lot to do with who's running the show on offense, who's the, you know, the point guard that's going to be out there all 48 minutes. You're going to have at least one Hall of Fame level point guard out there, and oftentimes you're going to just bludgeon the other team when they get to their second unit, which is, I think, why the ratings are better with Chris and James individually than when they're together. I think it has more to do with competition than anything else. But we don't want to talk just about offense. It's also about the defense. And when you factor in 3 players that are that versatile and more than that, that intelligent put together, and especially if they're going against an opponent largely comprised of second teamers at the time, it can be overwhelming. It can be suffocating. And again, as much as you want to focus on the 67 points the Rockets scored in the second and fourth quarter, it's also about the 41 they allowed. They were dominant on both ends. They can defend well in transition. They do a good job of running off of turnovers, off of misses, whatever it may be. And that's, you know, we know the Rockets want to play with pace. The problem at times with a year ago was, at many times, that pace can lull you into a style of play in which it takes a toll on your defensive effort. What we're seeing from Chris Paul is that the Rockets, they're able to be a phenomenal defensive team, yet still retain the X's and O's, the focus, whatever you want to call it, to also succeed on the defensive end of the floor, despite the higher pace. And that's what I think it comes down to, the IQ, not just Chris, but also Luke and PJ as well. It's really just the synergies from all 3 of those incredibly heady, high IQ players out there at one time. And at the moment, it's just absolutely overwhelming for opponents. Again, that's why the Rockets outscored the Lakers 67 to 41 in the second and fourth quarters. And that's why they were able to just coast to this 118-95 victory in Los Angeles on Sunday evening. Now, that's the first point of our three points, our regular 3 points recap style that we do for these post-game shows here at Locked On Rockets. Second, and it's going to be related, it's the showing from Eric Gordon. Eric, in his 30 minutes, 22 points, 9 of 18 from the field, and by far, a team best plus 37 in the plus-minus. That's staggering. That's incredible. And one of the more remarkable things about it, he was actually just 2 of 9, 22% from 3, which of course tells you he was 7 of 9 from inside the arc to get to 9 of 18 overall. And I know some folks are concerned about his three-point shooting, which has been well below 30%, actually, the last couple of weeks. He's been in a slump for some time. And maybe he had a little bit of extra spring Sunday night because of all the time off. As we said earlier, they had not played since Wednesday. They're not going to play again until this coming Thursday. So maybe it was a fitting time for Eric to get back to, you know, the Clipper Eric Gordon in terms of athleticism. That was what got thrown out early in the season, such as the opening night win in Golden State, when Gordon had a couple of moves that just were jaw-dropping from the standpoint of his athleticism, even relative to what we saw a year ago here in Houston, when he largely seemed more athletic and more comfortable than he was in New Orleans before that. So a lot of folks have been worried about Eric Gordon the last couple of weeks, and I get it, because big picture, you need him to get going from a three-point perspective. When you get to the playoffs, especially tougher matchups, the Warriors, if and when the Spurs get Kawhi Leonard back, the Thunder, if they ever put it together, when you go against those really good matchups in the half court and a best of seven, it's not just going to be the easy style the way it is now from the standpoint of, okay, over 48 minutes, you're going to find this run somewhere early in the second and fourth quarters, maybe, when you have Chris Paul against the other team's backups, and then you're going to put the game away. Eventually, you're going to have to execute, oftentimes late in games, with James Harden and Chris Paul together, and many times you need elite shooters around them. Eric Gordon, the reigning three-point champion, would seem to be at the top of the list, at least on paper. To this point in the year, he has not been an elite shooter. Now, the upside is that he has been an elite player. You look at his advanced metrics, he grades out very, very positively. I think he's actually been a pretty good defensive player for certain stretches this year as well. But the three-point shooting by itself is not there, and while it hasn't really taken a huge toll on his play or the Rockets to this point, it definitely could, should it continue down the line. They do need Eric Gordon to be the shooter that he was signed to be, because he's going to be the key to unlocking space for James Harden and Chris Paul against really, really good defenses. And so with his numbers slumping, even though it hasn't affected the team, it's a thing on Rockets Twitter. I've had a lot of people ask me, what do you think is going on with Eric Gordon? And the thing you worry about at first is he hurt? He did miss the one game against Denver a couple of weeks ago with a strained calf. We know the injury history. And so, yes, we know that when he started in the absence of Chris Paul, he did play a few more minutes than the Rockets probably wanted based on their absence of guards. So a popular theory that's been thrown out there is that, oh, is he overextended? Is he tired? Is he injured? Is it something like that? And from what I've seen, I've pushed back against it, because when you actually watch him on the floor, I don't see any limitations. To me, I see the same explosion in recent weeks that we saw early in the season, way back in October. He doesn't seem limited. He's still making plays off the dribble. We see him being a quality difference maker on the defensive end. It's just that he's not making shots. And so what that tells me, either he's in a mechanical slump, maybe he has issues with shot selection. I don't know. You can work on it at practice from the standpoint of his shooting mechanics, get him with the shooting coaches. You can watch on film and see, hey, even in this offense, is this a shot that maybe you shouldn't have taken? Maybe he's a little too happy. There are a lot of possible things that are going on. But if that's the problem, and I tend to think it is, then it's good, because it's fixable. Because as long as he's not hurt, the odds are he's going to revert back to who he's been his entire career, which is an elite three-point shooter. I don't buy the idea that he just forgot how to shoot and all of a sudden now he's just a low 30s percentage shooter. No, he's just going through a rough patch, and that happens to everyone unless there's some physical reason for it to last, or for it to be some sort of change to his career arc. And it's not the sexy explanation, it's not, you know, a hot take, but sometimes slumps happen. Players go through bad stretches, and to me, that's when you actually watch Eric Gordon, that seems the most plausible, because the factors that would lead to something more concerning, largely injury or fatigue related, I'm just not seeing it, because he's moving the same way he was when he was at his best, especially early in the season when he was not just dominant off the dribble, he's also making his threes at a high rate on top of it. I believe he was close to a 40% shooter the first couple of weeks of the season in October. Correct me if I'm wrong, but don't have this computer right in front of me, but I'm pretty confident he was very good from three in that very early stretch of the season as well. Well, folks, Sunday night, boy, the 22 points plus 37, but he was explosive off the dribble. I believe it was B-Ball Breakdown, one of the national accounts on Twitter, that called him one of the top three perimeter scorers in the NBA. While that might be a tiny bit of a stretch, I think that speaks to just how good of a creator he is, especially off the bench going against other teams' second units. And I just don't buy the idea that someone who scores 22 points in 30 minutes, I believe he had 20 in the first half, he wasn't really needed as much in the second half because the Rockets were largely coasting with that big lead. Folks, put up 20 points and a half, you have him, attacking at will, 7 of 9 inside the arc. He's getting to the rim. I don't buy that he's hurt. I don't buy that he's fatigued. Now, maybe he had a few extra springs on Sunday because of the days off, but folks, I'm not buying the idea that this is injury-related, fatigue, whatever it may be. And that's not meant to say that he's necessarily going to snap out of it on Thursday and make, you know, 4 of 6 from three. I'd like to see that happen. I don't know that it will. It's not to say that it's not a concern at all, but as far as his three-point shooting, which has, again, has kind of struggled over the past month, certainly the past couple of weeks, and continues Sunday night, 2 of 9, I don't see any reason to be overly concerned about it unless you see an underlying fatigue or injury reason to cause that. If that's not the case, folks, he has not forgotten how to shoot over the course of a month. Sometimes slumps happen, and they can even be prolonged ones in certain instances. So maybe it's issues with shot selection. I think it could be easy with the way the Rockets play for certain players to get a little carried away. Rockets give everyone the green light, but even saying you always have the green light, you can always certainly take that too far. So maybe there's issues with shot selection, maybe it's mechanics, whatever it may be. But the bottom line is, unless it's physical, it's fixable. And even though we did not see necessarily a silver lining from the standpoint of Eric Gordon's three-point shooting on Sunday night, I think there are a lot of positives you can take from the overall level of success and explosion he had. Because eventually, as long as he's not hurt, as long as he's still feeling fresh, and he certainly looked that on Sunday night, the shooting, he's going to figure it out. He's too good not to. If anything, you can celebrate the fact that he's that good. Again, 22 points in 30 minutes, plus 37 in the plus-minus. Big part of those lineups that outscore the Lakers, 67-41 in the second and fourth quarters, what we talked about in the first segment of this show. The silver lining, if you want to look at it, is that, folks, he's this good even without the three-point stroke. So just imagine what happens when those threes ultimately start falling again. By the way, one final take on it. I know some people are going to draw a little bit of a correlation. I don't think it matches exactly the downturn Eric Gordon's shooting with the return of Chris Paul, because a lot was made early in the year of, well, what's going to happen? Can the Rockets keep this version of Eric Gordon when Chris Paul returns? I definitely don't think it's related to that either. I think that's largely coincidental. If anything, I think he's getting a better quality of looks. The damn guy is just missing some shots, and sometimes that happens. He seems very comfortable. He certainly doesn't look tentative. Look at how often he's driving to the rim. Look at how much success he's having. I don't see any real relationship to Chris Paul. The timing actually doesn't match exactly anyway. He was already struggling from three, I believe, a week or so before the return of Chris Paul. But I don't think it's related to that. I think it's just largely coincidental, and it's just a matter of either with a combination of better shot selection, more work on the practice court, whatever it may be, eventually he's going to start making some threes. And folks, when that happens, boy, just imagine if you can combine the success that he's having off the dribble as an attacker, then with the Eric Gordon we've come to know over his first year plus in Houston as a three-point bomber, just imagine what you can have then. As good as the Rockets are now at 18-4, that's kind of the thing that makes you feel even better about it. They can be better than what they are. As good as they're playing, they could get better. And so, yes, the schedule is going to get tougher. I recognize that. This is not murderer's row from the standpoint of, the past couple of home games, the Knicks, the Nets, the Pacers. Now, the Lakers on the road. This is not murderer's row in terms of who you're playing. But the Rockets continue to get better. They continue to further integrate Chris Paul and capture the synergies from having two top 10 playmakers out there. One of them out there for all 48 minutes, and now you add in Eric Gordon, assuming he returns to form, especially from three. Boy, even if the schedule gets tougher, the Rockets can get tougher too. So if you want a positive to look at beyond the obvious positives, 18-4 overall, 7 wins in a row, 13 in their past 14 games, I think that's where you can get it. Now, the final point of our 3 points recap, I haven't mentioned the name Clint Capela yet. And this was not an ideal game for him. That's why. There were a lot of ideal things about it for the Rockets. Clint Capela might be the one that wasn't. Now, he did have 13 rebounds in his 22 minutes, which is always great. But 8 points, 13 minutes, 3 of 7 from the field. He was actually a minus 5 in the plus-minus, which in the game the Rockets won by 23, stands out. In particular, it was a little... Clint's struggles defensively were a little different in this game. In the past, we've seen the last couple of weeks, he's had a few low lights here and there, but they've generally been against teams in which it was more his struggling was on the mental side of the game. When maybe a team like the Knicks that has all these perimeter creators, they don't really have an established center at all, and he gets caught in no man's land thinking, okay, who should I guard? Because when he's been matched up one-on-one, we've discussed a lot on this show, the 4 meetings against Marc Gasol, the two against Joel Embiid, the one last week against Miles Turner when Capela went for 22 and 13, I believe. He's done well in those settings. It's the mental side of the game against the lesser teams. That's what he struggled with. Sunday against the Lakers was a little different. I don't think, especially the Lakers starting Brook Lopez in the middle, I don't think Clint struggled from necessarily a decision-making standpoint. I just thought physically he looked tentative. He seemed to struggle with the length. We mentioned Brook Lopez, who they start up front, but certainly Larry Nance. Then you look at Kyle Kuzma off the bench. Kuzma had 22 and 12 in his 27 minutes. Strong showing for him. But the Lakers have a lot of long, rangy, springy guys, and I thought Clint looked a little tentative on both ends, but especially offensively when to go up. We saw a couple of times during the game when Chris Paul and James Harden are actually coaching Clint, just showing him essentially how he should handle certain situations from a just a technique standpoint, especially on offense, when to go up, because boy, you're going against that kind of length and then that kind of athleticism. If you put the ball down, if you take the time to gather yourself, then folks, you're asking for trouble. And there were a few shots blocked. And again, I'm not panicking. As much as we harp on, there's been a couple of games lately that Clint has not been great. Big picture, look, he's been phenomenal. And not only is he, again, the topical stats, over 13 points, 11 rebounds per game, nearly two blocks in just 26 minutes. Player efficiency rating is off the charts. He's shooting in the mid-60s from the field. He's shooting in the mid-60s from the free throw line. So one stat from Kelly Scaletta this morning that one of the advanced metrics had him ranked, I believe, as the top offensive and defensive player in the league, I believe, on a per 48 minutes. So he's incredibly efficient. We're nitpicking. In general, Clint has made the leap to this point in year four to where I believe at this point he's still a fringe all-star talent, based on the production we've seen from this year. And to some degree, we're actually kind of making a mountain out of a molehill because the Rockets have just not had very many games lately. So any game, you know, we're looking for any trends, and to some degree that can lead to, again, making a mountain out of a molehill. Reality, over 82 games, everybody has ups and downs, and this was just a little bit of a down one for Clint. Thankfully, it didn't matter for the Rockets because they fared so well as a team. They were still able to win by 23, even with Clint Capela not at his best. And again, not at his best, Clint Capela still had 8 points, 13 rebounds in 22 and a half minutes, also had 3 blocks. So let's put it in perspective. Even Clint Capela's down games now, he still provides a lot of value. But certainly early in the game, as I said, he was tentative offensively, but around the rim, I don't think his rim protection was strictly good either. That allowed the Lakers to get a few too many easy buckets, get a little continuity going in the first and third quarters of that game. And the interesting thing about it is that it came the same weekend, as I'm sure a lot of you have read, a very interesting column from Sam Amick of USA Today about, of course, as we mentioned earlier, Chris Paul's first return to the Staples Center, but also, of course, his connections in LA, and one that's been brought up a lot lately is his connection with DeAndre Jordan, who, of course, continued star center of the LA Clippers. And DeAndre, we all know he's from Houston. He's got the tattoo on his arm. Diehard Astros fan. We all saw that during the run. He's a free agent, potentially a free agent, after the year. He has that option the same way Chris Paul did last summer. The Clippers are struggling. DeAndre's from Houston. He's still got a good relationship with Chris Paul from all the years they played together with the Clippers. Anyone who thought that faded now that Chris Paul is in Houston, the Sam Amick story that came out this weekend in USA Today. If you haven't, just go to Sam Amick's page on Twitter. It's very easy to find. It shows you that relationship between Chris and DeAndre is very real. And we've mentioned DeAndre Jordan on this show, actually it was just about a month ago, on Locked On Rockets, because there was a report in early November from Zach Lowe of ESPN that the Rockets and Clippers held exploratory talks that actually got semi-serious at the deadline last year surrounding Clint Capela and DeAndre Jordan, a potential trade. Now, the Rockets would have had to throw in, I believe, extra draft picks, also certainly other salaries to make the math work, some combination of Clint and Ryan Anderson. Maybe you get a little more depth from the Clippers up front as well to make that work. And it's a drastic trade. It's certainly not something that I think the Rockets would do at any point this season. And again, it's not straightforward that DeAndre is even an upgrade, because DeAndre, you compare the two players, Clint's better offensively. He's more efficient. I think he has a little more diversity to his toolbox in terms of his low post moves. He's got a little more touch. He's 5 years younger. Clint is 24 to DeAndre's 29. He's also, it's a small sample early in the year, but Clint's turned into a better free throw shooter. Right now, Clint's at 65% from the line, and DeAndre has never been to that level, although he is slightly better this year, I believe, upper 50s, which is growth for a guy who career, I believe, is 43%. So it's that DeAndre is clearly an upgrade over Clint. Clint offers his advantages. Also, he's young, he's getting better, but the one area that DeAndre is clearly better is as a rim protector. It's just not even close from the standpoint of defending the rim, who is better. And as far as, you know, which you should prefer, again, it depends on the team. I think a lot of teams around the league, you would definitely prefer Clint because so many teams are focused on 3 to 5 years from now rather than the here and now. And with Clint at 24, DeAndre at 29, and we're playing in the era of the Warriors where the bar is so ridiculously high, folks, the odds are 5 years from now, Clint Capella is going to be a better center than DeAndre Jordan just because that's how aging curves work. That's just the way this goes in the NBA. And so for a lot of teams, Clint would be the obvious choice. For the Rockets, it's a little more complex because the Rockets are one of the few teams that is about the here and now. They are, with Chris Paul and James Harden, going after the Warriors right now. And in certain aspects, you could make the argument that DeAndre Jordan could be an upgrade, particularly defensively, over Clint Capella. Now, again, I'm not panicking. Sunday was one night, one off night, and even an off night, he has 8, 13, and 3 blocks. Let's keep all of it in perspective. I don't expect the Rockets to do anything this year. Certainly, they're playing phenomenally well this year. I don't expect them to disrupt the chemistry unless things somehow go catastrophically wrong over the next 2 months before the February deadline. I think that's an extreme long shot at this point. Also, it's very difficult to make the math work. But when you get to next summer, if for whatever reason the Rockets come up short, file it away, because it doesn't take a genius to connect the dots. DeAndre's love of Houston, his relationship with Chris Paul, and all of a sudden with Clint Capella, due for a new contract, then all of a sudden it becomes more reasonable from a math standpoint to make that work. Because the past couple of years, it's been very difficult to objectively analyze Clint Capella for a couple of reasons. First off, no matter what, he's given you phenomenal production for that rookie contract. For making $2-3 million a year, folks, it's phenomenal what he gives you. So even if there are certain deficiencies for Clint, especially defensively, you say, hey, for what you're getting at the price, that's phenomenal. So use whatever salary cap resources you have on other positions. Because if you're getting that from the center spot, boy, that's an incredible value. The other thing is that Clint's been young, and even if there are deficiencies, you say, hey, he could still get better. And to a large extent, he has. Clint has taken the leap this year. So, again, that's why I don't think the Rockets ever got that serious about it. They did hold talks with, I think, Daryl Morey in particular has raved about DeAndre in the past, called it one of his great draft misses. I think he realized the value of rim protection, so I think he's curious. I don't think the Rockets ever explored it in depth, because, folks, you could always hope for further growth from Clint, and largely that's what has happened. And also, it wasn't really cost-efficient to upgrade that spot. Well, next summer, that changes. Because first off, from a player development perspective, there are a few exceptions, but by and large, who you are by year 4 in the NBA, that tends to be who you are. There are a few exceptions, but generally, I don't think it's reasonable to expect that much further growth from whatever we see from Clint over the balance of this season. Sure, you can make a few tweaks here and there, but in terms of his overall value, I would guess that by year 4, the contract year, generally, that's who he is. So there may not be the upward mobility that there was a year or two ago in the analysis. Also, next summer, Clint doesn't get graded on the curve of he's going to be paid, what, $2-3 million, whatever it is. No, when he gets a new contract and he's making, you know, somewhere around $15 million a year, in my guess, he gets to be graded on the same curve as everybody else, which is relative to his production. And it's very possible that Clint could even get paid more than that. I'm being conservative when I say 15. He could continue to play. If he keeps up what he's done to this point in the year, you could easily see him being a $20-plus million player in certain circumstances, because young NBA centers with a great work ethic, good teammates, no injury history, those types of guys don't grow on trees, even in this environment where there are a lot of young quality centers, and it would seem at first glance to be a little oversaturated. So it's possible Clint could even get paid more than that, but I'm going to say $15 million or so, just to be conservative, kind of paint an optimistic picture from a salary perspective and how you can fit him in. Even at a reasonable number like that, it's still different than when he's making $2 or $3 million. Also, from a trade standpoint, it becomes easier to facilitate because all of a sudden the math is there to where you can trade Clint Capella and not that much else for DeAndre Jordan, as opposed to right now, you know, Clint making $2 or $3 million a year, you'd have to trade another enormous salary, either Ryan Anderson making $19 million or some other combination to get there, just to get anywhere close to the salary figure of someone like DeAndre Jordan, who is in the low 20s in terms of his annual salary. So both from an efficiency standpoint and also just from a trade logistics standpoint, all of a sudden the calculus for Clint will change after this year. Now, all of that, the caveat is, I do not expect the Rockets to do anything in the short term, and barring an unforeseen downturn in their play this season, I don't expect it. That's exactly what I said a month ago when we first learned from Zach Lowe that the team had held discussions back in February at the deadline about a potential Capella and DeAndre Jordan deal. I think the Rockets, they go forward with what they have. They give this group a shot. They have earned that in the playoffs. And unless something changes dramatically over the next couple of months, I think the Rockets are very comfortable with what they have. But if, for whatever reason, they fall short, then file this away in your memory bank. And I'm not meaning this to, you know, turn into a hit piece on Clint Capella, because I am extremely satisfied with what I've seen from Clint Capella at this point in the year. I would think very hard about giving him an all-star vote if I could pick the top 12 players in the Western Conference. He has been that good, and I hope that continues. I hope they win a title, and it's very possible that they do. We talked about that last week. They are becoming a very real threat to the Warriors. I hope all those things work out. But if, for whatever reason, it doesn't, and if the play of Clint is any small role, and again, I'm not projecting, it could be any number of reasons, but Clint's had a couple of games, including Sunday, when he has not been at his best the past couple of weeks, so let's acknowledge the possibility. If, for whatever reason, the team falls short in the playoffs, and Clint is seen as somewhat of an issue, this is an easy spot to upgrade, just from the standpoint of DeAndre and the Clippers, that marriage is going nowhere. And it doesn't take a genius to connect the dots. As I said earlier, DeAndre to Houston, DeAndre to Chris Paul. There are a lot of ties there. And I'm not willing to say that he's 100% a better player than Clint Capella, but he's a different player. And if the Rockets think for whatever reason that they want that better combination, that better mix of DeAndre's defense, maybe his chemistry with Chris Paul, whatever you want to call it, then that's a route they could go. It's not a route I expect them to go this season unless things go shockingly awry in the next couple of months. But it's just one of those things, again, file away in your memory bank. We talked about this a month ago. I don't plan on talking about it that much during the year because it's highly speculative. It's months and months away. But with Chris Paul's return to Los Angeles, with the stories written this weekend, most notably by Sam Amick of USA Today, I also heard that Stephen A. Smith on First Take on ESPN mentioned, I believe Friday, that DeAndre wanted to go to Houston. And of course, it doesn't take a genius to put that together. But yeah, let's talk about it. I don't expect it to happen anytime soon. I hope it never has to happen. I hope Clint Capella, Clint is a great guy. He's made phenomenal strides. I hope he continues those strides. I hope the Rockets win with him. I hope they win big with them. It's entirely possible that he does, and we never have to have this discussion on any sort of serious level. I'm just telling you guys, it's not unforeseen for this to, in certain scenarios, become a story later on. So it's nothing you need to think about that much now. Just file it away in your memory bank. We'll see what happens this season, and then who knows, next June, maybe we're having a similar story about DeAndre Jordan and his contract situation, the same way we were having about Chris Paul and whether he would opt out and or ultimately opt in the case of Chris Paul, to facilitate a trade to the Rockets. Might be having a similar discussion next June with DeAndre Jordan. Again, though, that's a long time away, and I'm just mentioning it because, well, the stories were out there this weekend, and this week, again, it's another time to talk bigger picture because the Rockets, unfortunately, do not play basketball again until Thursday night, so a lot of time to reflect and think about a few bigger picture things with your basketball team. So, with that said, I think I will wrap things there because, well, those are my 3 points for our 3 points recap, and beyond that, folks, I don't want to go too in-depth on any one show because, folks, well, we've got a lot more to go forward with the next couple of days with the Rockets having no games. We're going to have plenty of time to dissect some of the bigger picture themes in the days ahead. So today I want to keep it as close to, I know we had the little diversion at the end on DeAndre, but as close to just about the Lakers recap as we can. In the next couple of days, we'll talk about a few bigger picture items. I'm working on some interviews, and we'll see what we get the next couple of days as far as coverage here at Locked On Rockets. For now, though, if you want to follow me the rest of the day, real-time on Twitter, the easiest way to keep up with me on a real-time basis, you can do that at Ben Dubose, or you can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. You can also email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan. Once again, happy final from Staples Center on Sunday night. Rockets 118, Lakers 95. James Harden led the way, 36 points, 9 assists. Eric Gordon and Chris Paul had 22 and 21 points, respectively. Only three players in double figures, but folks, when you're that good, and the three players are James Harden, Chris Paul, and Eric Gordon, then more often than not, that's going to be enough to carry you in the National Basketball Association. With the win, of course, the Rockets are 18-4. They've won 7 in a row since the return of Chris Paul. They've won 13 of their past 14 ball games. Still firmly submitted as the number one seed in the West ahead of the Golden State Warriors. So feel good about it, Houston fans. It's a good time to be following the Houston Rockets. And for me at Locked On Rockets, I'm just pleased to get to play a small role in that. So for now, go out, enjoy your day. Be happy with what you've seen, Rockets fans. And we'll talk a little bit more in the next couple of days. As I said, I'm working on some interview shows, and we'll see what happens the next couple of days, talking about what we've learned to this point in the season. Again, Rockets 22 games through 82. That means 60 are left. And then getting you ready for Thursday night when the Rockets are next back in action against the Utah Jazz on the road, second game of this three-game road trip. Until then, folks, have a good day, happy Monday, and we'll talk again tomorrow right here on Locked On Rockets.